This is Carol Steckler at KLOILP, Lopez Island, Washington, 102.9 FM, Thursday morning, and we're going to be doing a little bit of talking trash again here. And I have two guests in my studio today. They're both volunteers. One, the first one we're going to listen to is, or talk with, I should say, is Mickey Ryan, and she was the volunteer coordinator, has been with the dump since before it opened in January. And the other one is Rose Torres, and she is a volunteer at the dump, and we're going to find out for how long and hear some of their stories. And but first, let's have a little bit of trash music. It's Pete Seeger, and we play it every week.
Mr. Thompson calls the waiter, orders steak and baked potato. He leaves the bone and gristle, and he never eats the skin. The busboy comes and takes it, with a cough contaminates it. He puts it in a can with coffee grounds and sardine tins. And the truck comes by on Friday, carts it all away. 1,000 trucks just like it are converging on the bay. Oh, garbage.
And there it is. And we're talking trash, the first part of that song about what's going to the landfills, which eventually will be filled up, and then maybe they'll find a couple more, and they'll be filled up, and there'll be no land left to use to fill with our garbage. So that's why the Lopez Island organized itself and voted at 85% last November. 85% of the people who voted to tax themselves. Yes, I repeat, we voted to tax ourselves with a mission of zero waste. And the Lopez Solid Waste District was born. Now, the county supported this move, and we couldn't have done it without their support. So, but the Lopez Island residents are the ones who organized, did all the legwork, and eventually all the voters on Lopez who voted in the November election. Again, I have to say 85%. I think it was the largest percentage of voters who voted on a levy in San Juan County in history. So there you have it. And we've had some pretty good votes on levies, like the fire districts just had a 70% something. So we're pretty famous for supporting our services. But this was a brand new one, so it was an additional tax. And yeah, that's what we did, citizens of Lopez. And we're about to come up in November we have to do this levy once a year, which is, I'm sorry, that we didn't have a choice about that. That's what the law says. There are only three publicly owned by the citizens themselves, three similar solid waste districts in the state of Washington. Now, I know one of them's in the Metau, I think, but I don't know where I should find out where they are. I've never really heard. So we're pretty unique, and because of that, we are, until we change the state constitution, I guess, it's not even a law, somehow we have to get an amendment to the state constitution to be able to have a levy for more than a year. Which Sandy Bishop's on the board, and everybody's expecting that we may actually eventually be able to do that, because voting for a levy every year is really risky business in terms of running something like a solid waste facility. So in November, it's going to be on the ballot again. And we're continuing with our series of Talking Trash with our guest today, whom I'm going to introduce right now. And good morning, Mickey.
Good morning, Carol.
And I'm going to say that one more time because I forgot to put your mic on. Luckily, we are on community radio. Good morning, Mickey.
Good morning, Carol.
And good morning, Rose.
Good morning, Carol.
Yeah, nice to have you here. We're going to speak with both of our guests. But first, so we get a coherent tale from each of them about their own life and how they came to be a volunteer. And they're more than volunteers, and we'll hear more about that at the dump. I mean, they're really there's a few people at the dump in Take It or Leave It, and there's a few people in recycling, and then there's a few people on the board, the whole board actually, who work tirelessly to have this be a successful it really is a small business. It's a small nonprofit business. And nonprofit is kind of the key word there. But Mickey, let's talk a little bit about you. And I know you've been on the island for a lot while. How long have you lived here?
I lived here full time since
1999. And you can look at that little level and make sure that you're moving the key to the right a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so 99, and since then, what are some of the things that have taken your heart on Lopez and in your life? I know you would tell museums.
Well, I have a background in museum management.
That's what I thought.
That's where I got my, Alice telling me to be louder, so
yeah, he is.
I'm going to move in here a little bit closer. Is that okay, Rose?
No, that's good.
Yeah. So, yes, I got my master's in museology at the Center for Museum Studies in San Francisco, BA in anthropology. I was an archaeologist before I got involved in museums, and that was a lot of fun and a lot of work, and I got tired of being dirty and working in the rain and climbing in and out of ditches, and thought I'd like to be on the interpretive side, so went indoors to the museum.
Okay. Well, and that's one of the reasons you work at the Take It or Leave It, because you're in the rain, you get dirty every day.
It's also a collections manager's dream.
I lost my headphones. I can keep talking, but I can't hear anything. This is kind of a funny morning, but that's what community radio is. Okay, so, and what are some of the other things that you've, I know you've been and done some theater. I remember that for sure.
Yes, where you were directing. Yeah, that's kind of fun. I hadn't done anything like that since I was in junior high school, really. So it was a lot of fun to work with Carol in the community theater, Lopez Community Theater. Worked as a stage manager with her for Grapes of Wrath.
Grapes of Wrath, yeah.
And got to shoot off the gun. I like that, actually. And let me see. We're in Under Milk Wood, and wasn't there one more?
Fiddler? Did you do anything with Fiddler?
No, I didn't do anything with Fiddler. Maybe it was just those two. Yeah. It just seems like a lot.
Yeah. And I know you're working with the music festival.
Orcas Island Chamber Music Festival,
yeah.
Yes. That's my current major commitment.
Right.
Although I started out as volunteer coordinator for the dump, I could only really commit 3 or 4 months to that, knowing that I had the Chamber Music Festival to work for coming up in March. So that was why I was limited to working from December to March.
Yeah, and that was known at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So back to the beginning with your mm-hmm. degree in musicology, huh?
No, not musicology, but museology.
Museology.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's museum.
Yeah, just museum.
I heard
museum
the wrong thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. So, and you're still doing some work with the Chamber Music Festival, right?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Yeah. So, is there a concert coming up yet?
There is a concert coming up August 11th, and we have three superstars in the music field. Carter Bray, the principal cellist for the New York Philharmonic, is coming to Lopez Island. Jeffrey Kahane, who's the director of the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra, and Joe Swenson, who's the conductor emeritus of the Scottish Chamber Orchestra, are coming here to Lopez to join Alicia Friedman, who a lot of people have heard before, at Lopez Center, 5 o'clock, August 11th.
Those are rock
tickets.
Stars in the...
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. So, and now you were... I know you've set up... let me see. Get my tongue back in my mouth here. I'm took over after Mickey left as a volunteer coordinator. So I've been there for a couple months now. And the system was all set up, and that was what you did.
Yeah, and that was, that was not entirely my doing. You know, Sandy Bishop had been working very hard up to that point and had pulled together sort of the essential documentation needed for a volunteer program. And I believe her biggest model was the National Park Service for how they deal with their volunteers on San Juan Island. And with my background in museums, of course, I've dealt with volunteer management in all of my museum work. Museums would not exist without volunteers, just as the dump would not exist without its volunteers. It's a tremendous commitment. So I went online, and once I had decided that, okay, I really did need to do this because I really wanted the dump to succeed.
Yeah.
I really
yeah.
wanted it to happen and knew it could not happen without volunteers putting in as much as they could. And for that, you need a strong volunteer program, well-organized, yep. Well-founded in facts and something that really appreciated their volunteers. I was moving the microphone away from me here. I'm not sure why. So I went online, and I looked over a couple of my notes this morning, because I knew that there were a couple of really good sources for this. One of them that I found really interesting, because it had been a while since I had been managing volunteers, mm-hmm. was to look at the current trends in volunteer management. And there was a wonderful paper written for the Canadian Blood System that dealt with the changes in volunteer management, volunteers, the changes in the life of a volunteer, uh-huh. why volunteerism is different now than it was 10, 20 years ago. And a lot of it had to do, of course, with the aging population. Mm-hmm. Us baby boomers are, all getting up there.
Yeah.
And so they
still have a lot of vital life left.
Absolutely, we do. But the trend is for younger people to come in who have different ideas of commitment. And they are very willing to work very hard for 3 or 4 months. And do something that changes the world. And, of course, that's what Lopez is doing, really.
Yeah,
it's quite innovative here. And the other was a study done by Entremundos, a volunteer organization in Guatemala, put out a beautiful volunteer management manual. It had an assessment of your own volunteer program, what your volunteers get out of it, what the organization gets out of it, how you make sure that you're getting the highest quality people that you need and that you're giving them
what they need.
So those two probably were my source for the forms and the approach that I took to developing this.
As someone who's taken it over, it is incredibly well organized, and I assume your husband Bill had something to do with this.
Bill got me into this. It's all his fault.
Yeah.
He was working with the board on the computer program.
Yeah, on the computer end.
And
that's really what makes it possible for us to manage the number of volunteers we have and to continue to take new ones every day. If you're listening, we need you. We probably need you this weekend. So give us a call. We'll put you to work right away. The call just went out for August. We'll talk about this a little bit later, but let's move on and talk a little bit now. Rose and I are both here I'm a new volunteer. Rose has worked there a lot longer than I have. But I want to talk with Rose about how long have you been on the island, Rose?
Well, let's see. I arrived July 21st in 1988, so it's been 25 years past month.
Wow.
Since we're in August now.
Wow, wow. And did you come alone, Rose? Or?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I was trying to decide at a point in my life what I was going to do next and read the Suntide magazine. And I think I said the wrong magazine, but anyway, it was a local publication. And fell in love with Lopez right away, but I did stay on all the other islands just to make sure, and here I am.
Yeah, no, I can get that. So what are some of the things you've done since you've moved to the island? I know right now you're working in home health care, and where is that where you started, or have you done other?
Well, actually, that is where I started. Excuse me. I started right away with an MS patient, and I came here thinking that I was going to open up a little bed and breakfast, and then ended up helping a patient, and I had already done that before, so I knew that I enjoyed that work, and it's just continued on. But in amongst all of these things, because we tend to wear so many hats on Lopez,
yeah.
Which is sort of right up my alley, I ended up first being in real estate for like 10 years, and then I owned a restaurant for 3.5 years.
Yep.
And I don't know how many years I actually did this, but I think it was like a 3.5 years that I actually helped at the senior center and did the lunches there for them, trying to bring up their senses a little bit. And hopefully it happened. I mean,
we know it happened.
They have a pretty good...
If you go now, yeah, and that was very successful.
And in all the while, I've been doing caregiving in and amongst these different types of work that I've done.
Even when you were running the restaurant, you were still doing...
Yes.
Caregiving?
Oh, I was selling real estate, running the restaurant and working there, of course, and caregiving, all three at the same time, which nearly did me in. But
yes, I can well imagine. Luckily, you were a few years younger.
Yeah, that's right.
What was the name of the restaurant? I forget.
It was called the Wild Rose Cafe.
That's right. I knew. Yeah, that's nice. I remember that.
That was a fun venture.
Yeah.
And now I'm pretty much reached the ranks of retirement.
Mm-hmm.
Still do a little dabbling here and there to help in whatever situation I feel called to help in. And I'm especially kind of now a professional volunteer.
You are. I could name some of them because I know you work at the library.
Yes.
And tell me where else you volunteer.
At the thrift
shop. Yep.
And the dump.
And the dump.
Yep.
Okay, good.
Meals Mall.
Right. And Mickey, you chimed in and said, do you work at the library too?
Yes, I'm a library volunteer also. Also, I'm secretary of the Friends of the Library.
Oh.
Volunteer organization. And I'm an active volunteer for FLIP, Friends of the
Library. Oh, yeah, right.
Pool.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to get that pool in that ground.
Yeah. I think a lot gets accomplished on this island through volunteerism.
Absolutely. And even things like the dump that turn into really vital, groundbreaking, really. I mean, we're setting a standard here that the whole country can learn from, which happened originally with Take It or Leave It 22 years ago when Neil started Take It or Leave It and recycling. That was not even commonly spoken of, and people came from all over the country, either just on vacation and they happened to drop into the dump, or they came to see how we were dealing with solid waste. And so for 22 years now, we've been in the forefront of solid waste, and here we are again, and it's just quite exciting to be a part of this. You know, I really, other than going to the dump, until... I don't know why I said yes, but I'm so grateful I did. It's a weird thing for me to do because I also have plenty of things on my plate. But I'm so glad I did because now I want to talk a little bit about what it's like to be a part of this grand, in a way it's an experiment, but it's larger than that. And so let's set a little background here because the volunteers at the dump are a part of the business plan. The dump couldn't open 3 days a week, summer and winter, let alone expand its hours in the summer. In the way it's operating now, we actually took over a bankrupt business, and we're still paying the past debt on that. And that was the county could not run the solid waste sites. They were losing money every year. And we're now, I think we pay $38,000 a year for 8 years or something like that to pay that back debt. So we are taking over something that hasn't been run. And it wasn't that they were poor managers. There was just not any way that the citizenry was going to vote for what it really took to take care of our solid waste. So breaking it down into districts, we're the first district that's finished their plan. The other two districts are working on theirs, and they're hoping to somehow come up with something similar to what Lopez has done. But we're the first ones there that are still doing this. I guess the other ones are still being serviced with San Juan, Sani, or whatever it's called, San Juan Sanitation, I think. I don't remember what it's called, but it's from out of Bellingham, and it's a large conglomerate of people who take care of solid waste. So back to what we're doing here. And so part of the business plan, and this was really well thought out, was that there would be two part-time employees. And of course, before there was one full-time and one part-time employee that the county, and they managed everything. There were a few volunteers that worked with Take It or Leave It. And they worked hard. But there were less than five, I would say. And they worked in the evenings when it wasn't open, and as did Neil Hansen, who imagined first, had the vision, and implemented it, and was a county employee, but he was full-time, and so he could volunteer. It was legal for him to do that as a full-time salaried employee. He volunteered more time than he worked during the week. I know that for a fact. To put into place the recycling and Take It or Leave It, because that wasn't the county's goal or mission at that time. So he did that out of his own passion for being able to find a way to do this responsibly. So the new business plan, again, is from that model, which was not financially sustainable, to have a volunteer base that would actually do the work at Recycle. They have to be there every day. We're going to have a couple recyclers in later, probably next week, to tell you about what's happening up there, because that's also a really fascinating story. And Take It or Leave It, which is a little more labor intensive, because in Recycle, it's very intense while the dump's open. But they go home and everything's finished and it's closed up and it's a brand new story. We go home and we can barely catch our breath, and a lot of times many volunteers have to go back when the dump is closed and help make sure everything's on the shelves and it's in the right order and things are taken care of. It's many, many volunteer hours that are not on the clock, so to speak. But this is the business plan for the solid waste facility on Lopez. And I say this because the goal of the solid waste facility, as I mentioned before, is zero waste. Now, we are reducing our waste and increasing our recycling, but you know what? The money that pays right now for solid waste is primarily garbage. Even if we have a $100,000 levy, which we have, and this levy is going to be slightly higher, and we'll be talking about that soon. I can't even tell you how much. It's not much. I don't want to mention an amount, but it's not a lot. Because as we reduce our garbage, which is historically what's paid for solid waste, we have to find a way to increase our revenue. And we're already down to 33 hours a week for one employee and a little less for the other, I think. And we have about, right now, I'd say 30 really fairly active volunteers, and we probably have 15 that come to the dump at least twice a month, some once a week. And so that is a business plan that's making it possible for us to even imagine we could go towards solid waste. And ultimately, we are paying $8 a can now. But you do the math. As we reduce our waste, every can and that's our goal. This is our mission. The more successful we are in our mission, the more financial problems we're going to have on that side of the ledger, because that reduces our revenue. So the only really viable way to support a solid waste facility with our mission is through taxation of all the citizens through a levy amount. And so that's where we are. So the volunteers are the people who make this grand vision even possible. And we're going to talk a little bit about what it's like to show up to work. Our shifts are 2 hours each. And in the summertime, there's three shifts, and in the winter, there's two. So right now, we're still, till September 15th, we're running three shifts three times a week. And let's, I'm going to ask you ladies, how long have you worked at the dump? Rose, how long have you been a volunteer there?
Gosh, I don't even remember putting a date on it, but it's 2 or 3 months, ever since we started this new program.
Oh, the
so
summer?
So how long has that been?
Since the summer program?
Since the summer.
It started, when was it, June 15th?
May 15th.
May 15th, okay. Yeah. Since then. Yeah. Well, you came at a crucial time. I don't know what we'd do without you.
Well, it was when we started the whole volunteer program.
Oh, really? So, oh, that was way back.
Well, since January has it been? Because it was cold, you know, at the time.
Oh, okay, that was January.
So,
that was January, Rose.
Yeah, time
that's
flies
more than two
you're
or three
fun,
months.
That's all yeah, I can say.
Mickey would know because she started it. And Mickey, you were there before January, before we opened, even obviously.
December with meetings and organizing and understanding what it was that we needed to do and needed to have in place, and then organizing that the first call for volunteers, where we had the meeting at the library, and it was just wonderful. Everyone packed in. It was standing room only at the meeting room.
That's exciting. Yeah, it must have been an exciting time.
It really was. It was thrilling to see that interest and to see who was there. Everyone was there. Then we went over to the dump site, and Neil gave an idea of how the dump operates. The three activity areas, the recycling area, the Z-wall, which is where the garbage is dumped, and the take it or leave it. So,
okay. And so you signed up shortly thereafter. Were you at the library meeting, or did you come on board?
No,
a little
I
later?
Didn't. I wasn't at the library meeting. Actually, I hadn't really planned to sign up, but I can't remember if I ran into Mickey or somebody that said, well, since you're volunteering, why don't you come over? So I decided, okay, if they needed volunteers, I should do that, because that was sort of my retirement goal.
It's right across the street, after all, Rose.
Well, I know. I could live there, I suppose, but
some people did in the old days.
Yeah.
Before we took over.
Yeah.
So, you guys, I've only, literally, honestly, the first time I worked at the dump was I don't remember, but it wasn't even when I began as a volunteer. It was, as a volunteer coordinator. It was shortly thereafter, because there were holes in the schedule, and there I was, and there I'm still. So please volunteer. Come on. I'll even use my wheelchair. I can't push a cart. And so it's hard for me to work alone, and I'm signed up a lot alone. And I don't really mind saying there are more than I that are older people that have, they're mobile but need to sit down at least half the time that they're there. And we need help, folks. We need help. We are kind of the backbone of the volunteers, our generation, and we're getting older. And we need you young and middle-aged people to come in. We're open on weekends, so you can get there. And we're also open on Wednesday if you're retired or what. Anyway, I'm just going to keep doing pitches, because we need you to sign up. Call 2138. That's my phone number. And this is Carol Steckler. I'll answer, and we'll get you signed up. So let's talk a little bit about what it's like to go to work. Both of these women work every week. Every week at the dump. I mean, they're there. And your shift is 2 hours, but I know Rose closes on Sundays. And I would be amazed if you got out of there by what time usually?
Oh, I don't know. 5:30 or 6 sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly. I know that. Yes. And you come in, and what shift do you work, Mickey, on Wednesday?
Right now I work the first shift on Wednesdays.
Wednesday morning.
When I started, I worked every shift, every time the dump was open.
Oh, my gosh.
And came in before it opened and stayed till everything was put away, because we were learning how to make this operate.
Yeah, how to work.
And that was essential knowledge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
it was.
Also, I got to meet all of the volunteers that way.
No.
And this is just at Take It or Leave It talking about.
Right.
I haven't worked. I went up to recycling to learn it so that I could do it up there, and I thought it was too much work. And I could, all these people running around, and they were all enjoying themselves so much. Everyone had big smiles, and everyone was so helpful, and I was worn out after just about 15 minutes.
Yeah,
so.
I'm looking forward to talking to those folks.
Yeah.
We work hard in a different way down
yes,
below.
Yes, yes.
So when's the last time you worked at the dump? Last week?
Yeah, Wednesday.
Wednesday.
Yeah.
So
not last week. That was yesterday.
Yeah. That was yesterday. Me too. I worked there last night. Oh, my God. Wow. So let's look back over your experiences, and let's talk about some of the things that really make you smile and think about how satisfying it is to be a volunteer at the dump, whoever wants to jump in.
There are countless things. Do you
want
to
know?
Go ahead?
I'm trying to think. I feel like I'm there because I know that there's a need, and I feel like that's my life now, is trying to deal with true needs of the community and people in general. So I see that at the mall, we call it, there are things that people really do need. It's always exciting to see something come in and put it out, and somebody's, oh, I have been needing that. Or so that's to me a real plus when that happens, and it, of course, it happens every time probably. And it's of course, all the things that come in are interesting. I'm not a real shopper type person, so I'm not a good one to say, oh, yeah, I'm just, all of these things are wonderful. They are. They do have a real place. Sometimes there'll be something that I think, you know, really is wonderful, but I'm not a good person to ask about those types of things, I guess. Jump right in there.
Well, I know that it takes some retraining of yourself to realize what function is and what usefulness is in the minds of others. If your lifestyles are different, for example, you know. So somebody came in once with a bunch of really badly torn jeans, Levi's, you know, and. You know, I thought, well, these will have to go on the rag pile. And I don't remember who I was working with. It could easily have been Rose at the time, who said, oh, the teenage girls will kill for those. So out they came out of the rag bag, and they went back onto the shelf where the jeans were stored. And sure enough, you know, they're gone. And it that's true of almost everything that comes in there. There is... If it still has some usefulness to it in any way, shape, or form, someone is going to want it. Yesterday, when I came in, I brought some things in, as I do just about every day, and we had an old threshold from the door, and we built our house, as I said, in 1999. We had been coming up here since 1978 and camping.
Yep.
Built a tent platform, you know, the whole gradual thing that everyone on Lopez does.
Yep.
But we didn't start building until 1999, and we had a temporary threshold on our door. And it's just been sitting in the basement, you know, since 1999 when we put in the permanent door. So threw it in the car and brought it in, set it on top of things out there at the front. And the next time I turned around, it was gone.
Yep.
I mean, things just go like that. We get irrigation. You know, the permeable hose stuff that you lay out in your gardens, stuff like that goes almost immediately. We've had everything you can think of. One day a new resident of the island came in. They had just moved everything up there. They had so much room in their kitchen. They had duplicates. She brought in, I remember this so distinctly, she brought in this beautiful stainless steel stock pot, something that you could like boil crab in or something.
Yeah, I mean, it was $200.
Oh, it was enormous. It was probably even more than that.
Yeah.
And just a beautiful condition. I mean, looked brand new. And a 2-inch thick maple chopping block that was probably 2 feet by 18 inches or so. It was a good size thing. And I thought, wow, as I set them in place. And a while later, a fellow came in, not a very long time later, probably a half an hour later, he came through, and he was talking with someone else about, oh, he was cooking with the paella dinners that they did at Vita's, I think. And he talked about how he was looking for some cooking things. And I said, well, did you see that stock pot? And he was on his way out. So I said, did you see that Scott stock pot back there and the chopping block? And he hadn't seen them. So I brought him back and showed him where they were. And he went out with the biggest grin on his face. Yeah. And that very same day, there was a little kid who came in with his parents, and he went back to the children's area and came back, you know, just holding this pride and joy. I think it was a car that, you know, had the doors opened and the steering wheel turned on it and yep. everything, but you could still hold it in your hand. Yeah. So it's just great to see those smiles, to know yeah. that you've really pleased someone.
Yeah.
And then there are people who come in who are really, truly needy, too. They need those pillows. They need the sheets. Yeah. You know, they need
The blankets.
Oh, yeah. The blankets in the wintertime. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there is a difference, I think, between the summer and the winter users of the yeah. mall. I see a lot of people coming in now in the summertime who are really they're not desperate. They yeah. are just casual shoppers, you mm-hmm. know. And, yeah. of course, we've got something to please everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Absolutely. And when I think about it as a volunteer, this all just happened yesterday. This is one day. And frequently people will come up now in the summertime. I know this happens more in the summer than any other time. And with an armload or a small amount of things, and they say, "Where do I pay for this?"
Yes.
That always makes me smile.
Yes.
Because it's such a pleasure to say, "It's yours. We don't charge. Can I give you a bag? You can take more."
And then they'll give you a donation.
I know. That's right. We did get some donations yesterday. And then the other couple other things happened. A boy came in with his father, and he was bringing back the books that he'd picked up last week at the dump. And he'd read them all, and he was bringing them back, and then he left with another whole pile of books. And so it's kind of also a lending library, and that's the first time I've seen that, but that was a new experience. And they were visiting here, so they were staying here for a brief time. A lot of my stories yesterday involved children, and there was a family that was there for quite a while shopping, and there were about five small children, all the way from maybe a two-year-old, and they were trying to work the treadmills and stuff, and they were very respectful. And so I stopped and spoke to some of the two youngest ones that were on the treadmill, and their sister said to me, "They don't speak English." And so we had a lovely conversation. The other two older ones do speak really fine English. And I said, "So did you go to school? Is that where you learned English?" And I said, "Yes, I do." And they're in first grade, and they just spoke right up. They don't speak English. And I thanked them so much for telling me that about their siblings. And they were very respectful, and their moms were shopping. Two families, but I'm not sure about that. It could have been one family. And they were shopping for quite a while. It takes a while, especially if you're looking for clothes and going through the clothes bins. I mean, you can be there easily an hour, easily,
mm-hmm.
and if you're really serious in wanting some certain things. And the children were all really respectful. The children are respectful there. I'm in a wheelchair, of course, and I'd come through, and they'd see me coming, and people would move. Those particular group of children that were together would quickly move, and it was just lovely to have that interaction. And they weren't there consuming. Some kids are consuming and arguing with their parents about how much they want to take, but they weren't in that category, at least that day. And then the last story isn't about another aspect of take it or leave it. So a young boy I know of, his dad drove him up in the car. He got out of the car. He's in first grade. I can use his name because he's a dear friend, and his name's Nico. And he had two items for take it or leave it. He said, "Where do I go with these?" And one was kind of a thing that covered a pot, and I even forget what the other one was. So I told him to go up there and to the counter, and I was on the outside, the car side. So he went up there. He's a very small child, too. And he went up right up there and handed them his things, and they had a conversation about it. It was a transaction. You know, he was making a transaction, and he completed his part, and Sharon, who was there, was really gracious and completed her part. And I watched that, and I watched the dad in the car, and I waved at him, and I thought, wow, you know, there's so much happens here that we have no idea. Mm-hmm. No idea. So the human interactions like that for young children and their families that grow them into becoming, you know, who they're meant to be, which is, you know, responsible, articulate, brave in a new situation. You know, they had some courage. I just love facilitating that. I just love that the dad sat in the car, trusted that his son was taken care of. He walked right up there. He had no idea what to do or where to go. And it was a transaction completed, and he was, I know, felt really confident going back to the car.
An education in itself.
It is, absolutely. Yeah. So many people, too. I love talking to people who are just really enamored by it. I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
You know, this is amazing. How did this happen? I mean, all the stories, and people are really willing to listen.
And we hear it over and over and over. Every time someone jumps in and says, what you're doing here is marvelous. Yeah. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
You know, I'm so pleased to be taking a part. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, introduce them to thing, and I point out Neil, you know, who's usually over at the Z-Wall, and tell them that, you know, it was his vision that got the whole thing started.
Yep. And I'm hoping at our next meeting, because we all belong to a committee together, which is called the Take It or Leave It Subcommittee, and I'm hoping at our next, and then we make recommendations to the board about what should we think should happen at Take It or Leave It, and I'm hoping we'll get this sign recommended. You weren't at the last meeting, but it was in the minutes, if you noticed that will give people that information about when it started, that 22, 23 years ago, and Neil's name, although he doesn't want his name on there. So one more argument with you, Neil. An argument worth happening. And he may, that's when he could well, win. I don't want to say win because it's not win or lose, but he could well
prevail.
Prevail. That's the word I'm looking for. Because after all, it is his name. Mm-hmm. And so now there's the other side of any volunteer situation that you've ever been in. There are those moments when you think, why did I do this?
And, are you thinking of last night, perhaps?
I was thinking of last night, but I thought I'd let you, ladies, because you had way more last nights than I did. I'll let you go first.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think some of the things that happened to that I've noticed for me is that we have situations where people are coming in somewhat late with a whole lot of stuff. And if there's just one person volunteering, especially, it's a little difficult because you might already have tons of things stacked up, but then here comes a whole truckload right at closing time. And it just makes it very difficult for one person to try to deal with all of these things. And then, of course, we've got a situation where we aren't able to really look through everything as it comes in. And that makes it, not good, because we were trying to have zero waste at the dump, at the recycling area, and so we're kind of in a situation where we can't look at everything right if it all comes in at one time. So I guess I would suggest that we have, you know, if you're going to bring a lot of things, try to come earlier in the dump time program, you know, to be helpful to the volunteers, or be a volunteer yourself and be able to to help sort these things out.
Yeah, so we have two people on a shift instead of one, because it really does take two people. No one, we can't leave the front desk, and yet occasionally we have to take the baskets and go distribute them, or at the end of the day we have overflowing baskets and a lot of work to do.
Yeah,
those are our choices. You just notice if you're there. I mean, just look around while you're shopping at Take It or Leave It, and just notice the volunteers. We all have bright vests on. You can tell who we are no matter where we are there. So just see what we do, and imagine yourself doing that too. So what are some of your stories?
Well, I would just say the same thing that Rose said. Really, if there was one thing that I could change, it would be to create an acknowledgement, an understanding among people on the island that you cannot expect to bring a pickup load full of unsorted materials ranging from garbage to useful things to housewares to tools, you know, and little tidbits that rolled under the bed and all of that. Bring that within 10 minutes of closing and expect us who've already been there through the whole shift to stay there and sort through it. I also wanted to talk a little bit, if we could, Carol.
Oh, we have plenty of time.
Okay, we keep alluding to, you know, this little piece of what we do and this other little task. And I think it would be helpful to listeners, perhaps, to hear what it is that a volunteer does from the time they get there.
That would be really helpful. Why don't you do that?
I can start with that. And yeah. Rose, please chime in.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really this is a great time for that.
Yeah, well, we come, the dump opens at 11. So the first shift is 10:30 to 12:30. So it's a two-hour shift. So you have a half hour before the dump is open to the public to come in and see if anything has been left on the floor. Sometimes people come in at night and just leave things and then run away mm-hmm. because... I think it has more to do with not wanting to pay the disposal fees for garbage than it does to the dump hours not being convenient. I mean, we're a small island. We're open 3 days a week, and two of those days are weekends. That's probably enough, but there are people who circumvent that and just want to leave things there and run away. So you pick up those bags that have been left behind and determine what is garbage and what is useful and put it out. You sign yourself in. We have and put on your vest. But we have a sign-in sheet so that our hours are accurately tabulated. And this is for the State of Washington Labor and Industries Program because all of our volunteers are covered by insurance, by workers' compensation insurance. And so they have to be documented that they were actually there.
Yeah.
So that's what they do. And the same for recycling. They stop at the take it or leave it desk and sign themselves in and pick up a vest and gloves and head up the hill, and we pick up a vest, and we have big blue buttons that say, you can volunteer, or volunteer here, or something like that, and you can. So that's pretty low-key and pretty easy and easy to do for the first half hour. And I would say it takes about 5 minutes for someone to come down from the kiosk. They go, people will drive in, go to the kiosk, pay their dump fee, and then also take their recycling. And so it's sometimes it's 5 minutes before the first car comes down the hill, and that's when you start hopping. And 2 hours later, you get to sit down.
Pretty much that's it. Unless you're in a wheelchair, then you get to sit down the whole time, and you get to roll really fast.
Yeah. But when we greet people there, they come to the desk. We ask people now to bring everything to the intake desk rather than just bring it in. And in years past, they could just walk into the take it or leave it, put their stuff down anywhere, and walk away. And this is what was one of the things that was making the dump such an expensive place to run, because much of that stuff was garbage that needed to be in the garbage bins and not out at the take it or leave it. So the dump operations had to pay for someone else's garbage fees.
Yeah.
And what's the figure on that now?
Yeah, the figure on that, and you know, I thought it was, I know the last time we did a cleanup, which was about a month ago now, it was about $2,000 worth, and that was mm-hmm. just when we put the tables in mm-hmm, and cleaned up.
Tables.
But in January, you did a big cleanup, and I think that was $5,000 or more. Might have been more like $8,000, because I think the figure now is up to over $10,000 that it's costing us in garbage, folks.
Last year, wasn't it $25,000? That's a number that I heard.
That the county paid for garbage, yeah. And we didn't see that. We pay for it. Well, and we didn't pay for it because the debt we're still paying for. Mm-hmm. Part of our levy and our garbage fees that we pay now, as I said previously, is going to pay the debt that was incurred, not by, well, I guess, I don't know if it's not by poor management. They just couldn't figure out a way to get the revenue they needed to pay to distribute solid waste. And we're figuring it out, by golly. We're figuring out, and you're part of that answer.
That's right. Responsible about their own refuse right. is the major thing.
That's right.
And then the second shift is the same, except for it's a little different. You're still going to come in a half hour early. So there's a half hour crossover, which makes it a really nice transition to come to work and for the people to leave. So you're going to show up a half hour before they leave. At least I do. Aren't you supposed to? No, I guess you come in right at the
you
end.
You should come in a few minutes earlier
yeah.
for the second
yeah, that's
shift.
Right.
The first shift
Good
and
Lord,
the last shift.
Yeah, yeah. That's why I like it. But anyway, you show up when the last shift's over and take over, and you're going to be greeting people. Everyone has their own way. I say, hey, what do you got here today? And that's my invitation to open your bag. And don't leave. And everybody's got something they say. Do you guys have anything? I say the same thing every time.
Yeah. Well, if you're snowed under, you know, it's hard to, sometimes you don't even see the person that comes up. You've got so much stuff that you're dealing with. But, it's always a joy to open, have people come up with things that are somewhat tidy.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're folded and they're all clean and they're all appropriate. It happens. Oh, it happens a lot.
Yeah,
it happens
does.
More frequently than the bad stuff.
I agree, but way more. Yeah. There'll be a nice bag of household goods separate, mm-hmm. nice bag of clothes. The women's are together, the kids are together, the men's are together. Mm-hmm. This is what makes our life just a great pleasure, because we can move that on. And there's sometimes people lined up, and then of course there's those trucks. And I'm not going to tell the whole story, but this was a truck that showed up yesterday at 1:45. Get this, ladies, there were four of us working there at that moment. Now, Maria was supposed to be gone. Al is a little bit limited. I'm in a wheelchair, and Sharon was, you know, fully able. But there were four of us working, and I mean, we all worked the whole time. Maria had to quit she worked the whole time. And there was no way to keep up or anything. I mean, really, had I been by myself, I told Paige, I think I would have just started crying and gone home. Because, even to start would have been just really amazing. Even for anybody all alone. I mean, I'm talking a truckload of clothes. There was no furniture. Mm-hmm. Not a piece. No. I'm talking about a rounded truckload of clothes that weren't sorted. And there were some, the little trinkets that go in. I mean, actually, I'm embarrassed to say this, but I got so tired at the end, I threw pencils and pens in the garbage. Now, they were perfectly usable. This is a confession. But I couldn't face one more piece of little anything. I'm done. I'm all done. So that is poor judgment on my part. But that's what I did. The other thing I want to go into, because there is a fine line in all of, what I'm saying now has more to do with the revenue flow than what's useful. So the torn jeans, there probably is still a really good use for those. Our problem is that if they don't move on, we get top dollar from the people who take all our clothes. I don't forget what it is, 10 cents a pound, I think, something like that. And it goes to Buffalo Industries in Seattle. It's all compressed and whatever you call that, bundled. Now, what's that word when they put it through the machine? Anyway, they do that and take it down there by the truckloads.
Bailed.
I mean, bailed, yeah. But they won't take anything that's stained, torn, or has holes or anything. So there's now a different sorting line. So all the things that fit in that category go into a place called Rags, which they also take, but they don't pay for. It doesn't cost us much extra. I mean, we don't send down extra trucks or anything, but maybe over a year's time, the rags we send down might add up to half a truckload or a truckload. I don't know about that piece, but we don't get money for it, and it goes on board with the other stuff, and it goes to the same place. So, but everything that gets touched like that costs money. It costs money for Neil to take it up there. It costs money to bail it. It costs money for the truck driver to come up. It costs money to everything that's handled after the volunteers do it and take it or leave it. It costs money. So while we are, and I believe it's totally true, that there are even a lot of things that people that are broken that don't work that people would love to tinker with and fix. And we're trying to figure out a way we can have a very small contained area for that. But we don't have a market for it. So if it doesn't go, we pay the garbage fee. We're developing a market, I think it's possible Goodwill will take some of those things. I'm going to have to stop talking because I'm taking up all the time here. But there's more evolution and changes that are happening at the dump now than there have been in the past. And that most of that has to do with the revenue stream. And we'll be adding things as well as we'll say we're not taking any socks or underwear now. There's no market for it. We can't include it on Buffalo Industries. We haven't figured out any way to deal with it because it would all go in the garbage. And so our goal is to have zero waste as much as we can at take it or leave it, too. So we're sending some of that home with you to put in your own garbage. And not with apologies, but with information. We just have a couple of minutes here. What do you think is important to let our listeners know?
That we always need volunteers. We love volunteers. And SWAP gives you a party. Every few weeks we have a party for volunteers with good food and good conversation. And it's a good place to work. Very convivial time. Even though you're rushing back and forth, you have a purpose, and you really are doing something good for the planet. And it feels good to share that.
Yeah. Yay.
And I think it's good for all the people that come there. You know, if we talk to people that actually were people that used the facility, they would tell us that some of their best friendships have been forged at the dump. So there is just, it's really quite an amazing thing. You know, it covers a whole lot of different arenas of life.
Yeah, that's, I touched briefly, but it's true, that's a social event. As you're standing there sorting through the women's clothes or the children's things, or you're going to be sorting with someone who's looking for in the same category as you are, and you'll have a conversation, and pretty soon your families are getting together, and who knows where that goes. It's a social place.
Well, and if you're a person out there listening that thinks this is really kind of a strange program in general that we're talking about this, I was one of those people who felt like, okay, I'm going there just because they need someone. I don't really care about any of this stuff. But I have discovered that there is a lot more than meets the eye, and that it's just a bolstering of humanity in all kinds of different ways.
Yep.
Yes. I have one little story.
Oh, yeah.
If we have time, it's just a short story.
Yeah, no, we do.
Very first day of opening. When was that? January 3rd? Something like that?
Yep.
January 3rd. And the dump opened at, I think it was 12 to 3, the winter
summer
hours.
Yeah.
So at 12 o'clock. You know, we're all primed and ready for our first customers at the take it or leave it. And up the hill from the road stumps Grandpa John. Now, everybody knows Grandpa John. He's down at Hummel Lake, helps kids fish. He's caretaker of the lake. Wonderful personality. Great guy. He came up with fire in his eyes up that hill. And he's going as fast as he could, huffing and puffing up the hill. And he says, "You changed it. You changed everything." He said, "Everything I loved is gone. This is terrible. How could you do this? This is awful." And he went on and on and on and on. Grandpa John is now our best volunteer. He comes every day the dump is open during the winter, and during the summer he comes in every single Wednesday. He works at the lake, at Hummel Lake, on Saturdays and Sundays during the summer. But he is our best advocate, our best greeter. He's fun to talk with. He's just a great guy to have around. So I think of him as epitomizing what people expected. They expected, a lot of people expected trouble when the dump management changed. A lot of people didn't even know it had changed. They hadn't really, you know, noticed that there was any difference except that it was cleaned out, you know. But he expected something that would interfere with his life, and now he is getting so much more out of this. And he did all this transition on his own. He came in and he saw that it was good, and he wanted to be a part of it.
Yeah. the stuff was still there. Well, it's been a delightful morning, and I think I'm going to sign off here, and I'm going to sign off without our garbage music, because you know what? our dump and our garbage is more than garbage, actually. It's about human beings saving the planet at this time and place the best we know how. Who knows where this could evolve to ultimately, but it's the beginning of the middle, let me say, the beginning of the middle of saving the planet, and this is the way we're doing our part, and we'd love to have you join us. It's a great place to meet amazing people. So I'm going to say good morning to you, and Talking Trash, Carol Steckler, and Roast Horace, and Mickey Ryan signing off today. Okay, have a wonderful day here on Lopez, and talk to you next week.